Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Robots are here, vacuuming our floors, cleaning our gutters, and increasingly fighting our wars and exploring outer space. As the summer movie screens fill with fictional robots, good and evil, Transformers and Terminators, what's the real state of robotics right now? And what does the future hold as robots get enlisted in the military, help out with elder care, and almost certainly, says my guest today, merge with humans? This hour on Point, iRobot CEO Colin Angle on the present and future of robotics. You can join the conversation. Are you ready, more than ready, for a little robot assist? How about a merger? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now in our studio is Colin Angle, co-founder, CEO, and chairman of the robotics company iRobot. iRobot produces, among other products, the popular floor vacuuming Roomba robot and the military PackBot robot in wide use by U.S. Armed Forces. Colin's one of the world's leading experts on mobile robots, came up through MIT's Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. Colin Angle, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
So, are we in the midst of a robotics revolution? And if we are, where are we in the arc of that revolution?
Well, I think we're really just at the beginning of what will be a very exciting time for robots. We're starting to see the first applications where robots are becoming practical, where you could go to a common store like a Best Buy or a Target and find a robot device which will deliver more value to you than it costs to create. And that's a huge shift from where we were just a few years ago, where robots were exciting playthings and demonstrations sitting in research labs. Now you can start to buy them, but there aren't very many. So it's early still in what's going to be a long, exciting path.
We'll talk about that path and that future, but give us a little tour of the here and now, the what's going on right now, practical applications out there right now from consumer right on through,
sure,
military, you name it.
Well, on the consumer side, I mean, we're all faced with challenges of how do we maintain our homes, and robots are starting to make a difference there, where, for example, that robot Roomba, it's a floor vacuuming robot, and it has a home base where it lives, and it recharges itself, and you can set it to turn itself on every day, and it will go out into your home vacuuming the floors, the hard floors, the carpets, underneath the couches, and so
We've
forth.
We've all probably seen this, but it's sort of big disc that sits, yeah, not so big, but sits on the floor like a fat Frisbee.
Yes, yeah, so it's about the size of a Frisbee, about 3 inches thick, and then when it's done, it goes back and plugs itself in. So the big idea is that the routine daily vacuuming is now being handled by a robot, and that's a huge savings. You know, check that off the to-do list and move on. And so that was sort of the breakthrough application for practical robots, because here's something where you can visually see,
does work getting done in my house?
Is it, does it work or doesn't work?
That I'd have to do
work,
otherwise.
It's a gadget and it gets thrown
right,
away. If
right.
It does work, as it does, we sold over 3.5 million of them, and that was sort of the genesis for the expansion of iRobot, along with the military devices we'll talk about later. Mm. And that's given us the opportunity to work on new things, like we have a floor scrubbing robot, the iRobot Scuba, that tries to replace the getting
mopping
down on your hands and knees and scrubbing the floor and the mopping in your kitchen and bath. And then there's a whole industry around pool cleaning robots. So we have one, the iRobot Vero, and then there's a number of other manufacturers of pool cleaning robots. The idea is that leaves and stuff gets in your pool, sinks to the bottom, and makes your pool look lousy, and you need to get it out. And so why not have a robot do that?
Mm-hmm. And it's off your plate. You've got a gutter cleaning robot now.
Right. This is sort of in the category of things that people really should do. You're supposed to clean your gutters twice a year, and very few people know that they're even supposed to do it, because it's such a hassle to get up onto the roof and get all the gunk out. And what do you do with the gunk?
Do I have to carry it up the side of my house, or does it leap up there itself? Here?
Well, we don't have a flying consumer robot yet. That would be nice. But what it allows you to do is just get up once at one side of the gutter, put the robot in, and then it traverses the gutter instead of going up, getting everything you can reach, moving the ladder, then deciding moving ladders is a pain, then trying to be Spider-Man and then falling and breaking your leg. This is a practical thing, and we've been successfully putting those into the marketplace as well.
What is the difference between a robot and just a machine, a gutter cleaning? I mean, what makes something a robot?
Well, my definition for a robot is something that is able to perceive information about its environment using sensors, whether they be visual sensors or bump sensors or infrared ranging sensors.
Okay.
And then has a brain that thinks about what it's just seen and then does something physical, moves its arm, turns its wheels, and so forth, based on what it has thought about. And so those three steps, perception, cognition, and action, combined in one thing makes for a robot. And some of the devices, like the Luge, is a relatively simple device. The Luge is the gutter cleaning robot.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you have a remote control, you drive it back and forth and so forth, but it has some sensing ability in it to make sure you don't overcurrent the motors and so forth. So that's very simple. Whereas the Roomba, which has been, you basically tell it when you want it to clean your floor, but then it's all the Roomba. The Roomba autonomously turns itself on, navigates around your home cleaning the floors, and then plugs itself back in. And so the span of intelligence goes from the very simple gutter device to the much more complex floor cleaning robot.
There's the consumer side, and we'll talk more about it. You see a big future in elder care and robots.
Absolutely.
Take us all the way to the other extreme, the battlefront. Go to your website, and you've got sort of two big paths here. One is consumer, mm-hmm. The other is essentially military. You and others are doing a lot there. Give us a sense of what's going on right now, practically, in terms of robot application on the military front.
Well, the challenge that our soldiers in the field are facing these days is that the enemy is not lining up in straight lines and saying, "Okay, let's go shoot at each other." Something called asymmetric warfare now that we're facing.
Sure,
and that means that finding the enemy is one of the largest challenges, and they are going to try to strike back at our brave soldiers through indirect ways. And what happened and has been happening for quite some time in Iraq is these roadside bombs, where you set an explosive device that might be triggered by a wire or by a cell phone or something like that, and wait for our soldiers to come by, and then you detonate it and run away. And so that means that we have to go figure out how to address these threats without putting our soldiers at risk. And so when this new style of combat started to evolve, our nation, as it has traditionally done, looked to technology to try to find good solutions to better support our warfighter. And the roadside bombs were something that robots could do very well. If you had a suspected bomb in front of you, you could, instead of sending a soldier up to that bomb suited up in a big explosive resistant suit, you can just send a robot. And the robot would be the remote eyes and ears and arms of the soldier. So it might go up to this thing and you know, these types of devices could be buried. They could be hidden underneath dead cattle. They could be,
sure.
Or they'd just be sitting by the roadside, and the robot could excavate, dig, look around, and even use explosive sensors to try to figure out what's going on.
So how much of that is really going on? Because we still hear, and famously in the theaters right now, you can go and see about human beings walking up in those heavy suits and at risk and, you know, trying to unwire these things.
Well, it's when the conflict started, there were no robots with the explosive ordnance disposal teams. They did it all with the suits. And now there's been a complete shift in strategy where if a unit's robot is broken, they might not go out. And so that we've been rushing to make sure that our soldiers have sufficient quantities of this type of equipment to make sure that they don't need to suit up if a robot can be at all useful.
Do you know how many of those are deployed in Iraq today as we speak, or in Afghanistan?
Well, we've put over 2,500 of these robots into service, and there's other companies that have made robots as well. So the actual figures are probably over 4,000 or 5,000 robots out in service or training soldiers back here in the States to be brought over into service.
And then there's the whole sort of advanced visualization, going into caves or going over the horizon and that whole realm.
Right. So that the roadside bombs is again, that was the first major application. But there are many others. Again, the goal or the challenge that our soldiers face is going into these terrifying situations where there could be death waiting for them at any turn. You say, imagine yourself on the street of Baghdad and your mission is to go clear a building. And, you know, there's a door in front of you and you can kick down the door and throw a grenade in there and potentially wound or kill innocent people. Mm-hmm. Or you can, which that's an absolutely horrible decision to make, or you can throw yourself into that same room, look around, and try to evaluate what's going on before taking action.
Or maybe send a robot in first.
Right.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about robots with the co-founder and CEO of iRobot, Colin Angle. Robots very much in the movie theaters this summer. Here's a little bit from the movie Terminator Salvation, released in May. Here, a human resistance force fights an army of robots in a post-apocalyptic year 2018.
I knew it was coming. I thought I knew our enemy. I don't know if we can win this war. We are outnumbered by machines. And we have all lost so very much.
It's a long way from the cute little Roomba vacuuming the dining room. Let's get a call right here from Washington, D.C. and Philip. Hi, Philip. You're on the air with the CEO of iRobot.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I can certainly see the value in having robots, machines that can do jobs like bomb disposal and those kind of things that are put humans at grave risk. And I know that for the people who develop them and make them, more and more sophisticated where they can perform more and more tasks, that it's certainly bound to be very rewarding, fulfilling to advance their science mm-hmm. and their skills.
Mm-hmm.
But for the general population of the country, I think that this is that robots, machines doing more and more things is very disturbing. And it really comes to light in the fact that we've lost, 7 million jobs in the last year and a half. I mean, the more jobs that these machines, these robots do, the fewer jobs there are for human beings. And at some point in time, we come to a point where what jobs do humans have that they can do that have enough value so that you can make a living and raise a family?
And do better than a robot. Philip, thank you very much for that. Colin Angle, here it is, right up to the minute in our economic situation where mm-hmm. it intersects with the technology you're championing, and you hear Philip's concern.
Sure. Well, I think that there's a long history of as technology advances, we create new industries which create jobs for our population, for our nation. And, when people, when the TV industry came along, was going to obsolete radio. When the internet came along, it was going to, change the way media works and so forth. And what has happened again and again is that the future creates new opportunity for folks to create new businesses. And the robot industry is certainly coming along, and the United States has an opportunity of being the world leader in robots and creating thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of new jobs in this arena if we choose to take a leadership position.
I understand there may be a great industry here, but I can hear Philip saying, well, fine, you know, people argued about whether TV would take the place of radio, but in this case, it's human jobs, he's pointing out, that get taken over by robots. Somebody, you could hire someone to clean your gutter, unless you had a robot to do it.
Well, sure, but you can, you know, if you think of what happened in the audio industry with the manufacturing robots and so forth, they came in and allowed us to do more things to build better cars, and that the auto workers oftentimes had, you know, we found we didn't necessarily cut the labor force. We just made cars that weren't able to be made before, so that there wasn't a fundamental reduction in people put at work. Plus, we got to create an industry manufacturing and building these robots for the auto industry. And when you think about what the types of things that we're seeing for caring for and maintaining the home, there's actually shortages of people in the janitorial industry, people that aren't, or there is unmet demand right now.
I can't imagine it'll stay unmet for very long with 9.5% employment. Is recession good or bad for the robotics business?
Well, the robotic business is in its infancy, and so that really what we're seeing is the biggest impact on the industry of the recession is the tightening of availability of investment capital from venture capitalists and investment banks and so forth to help these fledgling small companies that are struggling to figure out.
So bad in that way.
It's bad in that way.
Maybe human, I mean, wages are not going up. Does that make humans more attractive than robots, even in repetitive work?
Well, we're not, I mean, there hasn't been this grand replacement of human labor that people were worried about 15, 20 years ago. It didn't happen in the automotive industry. In fact, we've seen some plants that were outfitted to be 100% robotic, mm-hmm. stepping away from that because the agility required in order to build one type of car one day and a different type of car the other way, the next day, was needed. And human beings are very, very intelligent, very capable, and very adaptable.
I didn't know that. Is that true even in Japan, where they've adopted wholesale robotics in their automotive factories?
It is. I mean, there's what you see now are people working in concert with machines and having a more flexible, better result because of that cooperation.
Huh. Let's go to Mike in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Mike, you're on the air with Colin Engel.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm all for embracing this technology as far as we can. The only concern I would ever have about it would be military aspects because, I mean, it's useful, but we always have to maintain multiple human links in the military technology. But everything else, I mean, we should be having cybernetic limbs in that for us. I mean, really, everything that makes us human, it's beyond what, you know, we can't define what makes us human. So it would be the same whether we have a metal arm or, you know, how many lives could be saved with this if we embrace cybernetic technology in just medical fields.
And Mike, what about our Washington caller's concern that robots will take human jobs when humans need them? He says, what are we going to do? We, i.e. humans.
We are the intelligence that creates this stuff. We should be using it for deep space exploration because the lifespan of a robot is 100 times that of a human, and it takes us 100 times longer to get where we want to go.
How about on the battlefield, Mike?
On the battlefields, like I said, we should never surrender the military control over to robotics. They're useful for their sensors, like some of on future weapons on the Discovery Channel. There's that show. There's sniper sensing robots and that. And to enable us to extend our sensory range is one thing, but even the Predators, you know, those kind of make me a little nervous.
Yeah,
I agree with them on that aspect.
There's an enthusiasm for the robotic future, also a cautionary note. Mike, thanks very much for that. Colin Engel, I'm reading here about robotics engineer Ronald Arkin. He's at the Georgia Institute of Technology, who just finished a 3-year contract with the U.S. Army to design software to create ethical robots. And that's robots, for example, with a built-in guilt system that, as you alluded to, should, could, maybe make them better at avoiding civilian casualties. Robots that would eventually be embedded with internationally prescribed laws of war, such as those in the Geneva Conventions? Ethical, ethics, software for robots?
You know, I think that's an interesting line of work, and perhaps one day is going to be important. The biggest challenge is, let's not fool ourselves. Robots are not that intelligent. They don't have the ability to understand the world that they operate in. And I'm a extremely firm on the fact that I think that there needs to be a human in the loop in any robot that is capable, that is armed, that could somehow do something dangerous to another person.
You may be firm in that, but here's the U.S. Army hiring for 3 years someone to investigate their own software.
Well, the U.S. Army has very also firm doctrine that there must be a human in the loop if there's a lethal capability associated with the device, with the robot. So this is something that is shared throughout the armed forces. That type of work is important because one day perhaps robots might be able to become sufficiently aware of what's going on in order
independent
to...
Independent actors, some degree.
I mean, a soldier is an independent actor, right? He is trusted with making life or death decisions, and, you know, who knows what the future may be like, but that's distant future from where we are today. We are not close to building robots that can perceive their environment and think about their environment and understand their environment in such a way that I would feel comfortable giving them the ability, and I'm not alone. This is a philosophy that's shared by the U.S. military, and so that there's real doctrine in place that prohibits a robot from initiating making a lethal decision without a person pushing a button.
U.S. doctrine for now, but of course we're not the only ones developing military applications for robots. You never know, and pretty soon, I don't know, robot arms race. Let me get a call from Spokane, Washington. Philip, you're on the air with Colin Angle.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Pleasure to be on the show. I'll be quick. Let's see. You know, it just seems to me, I'm assuming that all people would like to see a decrease in the number of wars. And personally, I'd like to see the end of war. It seems completely irrational to me that people actually have war. And the more we depersonalize it, the more likely it becomes. The less value is placed on any given battle situation. If there's less human life to be lost, the more likely we are to go out and blow one another up. And that's all I have to say.
Mm-hmm. Philip, implication is clear. Predator drones over Pakistan, getting a lot of protests from Pakistanis right now. They know something about that.
Well, I would love there to be an end of war, but unfortunately I don't think it's something you can just decide that you would like to stop unless you can do something about human nature. There are the Saddam Husseins of the world. There are people who are predisposed to do unconscionable things and try to seize power in violent ways. And as a nation, we need to be able to protect ourselves. That doesn't mean every war is justified. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't view war as a horrible and gut-wrenching decision to enter into. But once we do, I believe we should use every advantage in our power to be victorious in the war as quickly and as effectively as we can. And allowing the use of robots, giving our soldiers the ability to, as I was describing earlier, throw the robot in that door first instead of putting his own life at risk and minimizing the risk to someone innocent who might be sitting in that room or to the life of that soldier who might be jumping into a trap. That makes all the sense in the world, and I'm very, very firm on the fact that I think that our robots can save lives. They can help our soldiers do this, the very serious and very important job that they're entrusted with doing more effectively. And until we can do something about human nature, I think that there's always going to be a balance between protecting human rights, protecting our way of life, and through freedom, and responding aggressively when that freedom is threatened.
A balance with, no doubt, robots increasingly on those scales. We're talking with iRobot CEO Colin Engel. Let's get a call from Richmond, Virginia. And Rick, hi, Rick, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Just not a question, but just a comment. I haven't heard you talk about this application, but at the McGuire Hospital, the Veterans Hospital in Richmond, if you go down the corridors, long corridors, going to the different rooms, you'll see this robot that actually carries medical supplies from room to room. And if you step in front of it, it'll stop and, you know, go around you. It's pretty cool to see it going up down the hallway there. So I didn't know if you do it. You know, I had heard that application before, but I was just interested to see what you had to say.
Fascinating. Yeah. Colin Engel, what do you know?
I believe that's an Atheon robot, which is a very cool company out in the Midwest that has found a way to make a robot that will drive around the halls of hospitals. And so much of the cost of our hospital system is just getting stuff from point A to point B within a hospital. They've develop an automatic system to do so, and it's helping hospitals reduce costs and deliver a higher quality care because of that. So it's a really neat company, and again, another application in this emerging robot industry.
Tell us about some other applications we haven't come to here yet. What else is actually going on out there right now, company or others?
Well, there's a company called InTouch Health, and their idea is in hospitals that don't have access to all of the expertise and doctors that might be needed. They're working on technology to allow a doctor from another hospital or another part of the country to attend and examine patients remotely. So the idea is a robot connected to the internet where what the robot sees is transmitted over the internet to a display of a remote doctor. When the doctor talks, his voice comes out the robot, and that he can start to feel like he is in this other location.
Is that out there right now, deployed?
There's a number of those robots that are operating in hospitals today, and this concept of telepresence is one of the big up-and-coming opportunities that robots will enable, basically giving ourselves the ability to be in more than one place at the same time.
How do patients respond to that? Do you have to knock them out before they're happy to have a robot sawing away on them?
Or the robot's not performing surgery, although there is another company, Intuitive Surgical, where you have robots actually performing surgery. And that's a really amazing idea. In many cases, the surgeon is actually in the room with the patient, but he has a very intricate set of, I guess you could think of them as joysticks, that he's moving around. And when he moves his fingers, the robot has multiple arms and can make very precise and delicate maneuvers.
More precise than the surgeon?
More precise than the surgeon. Plus, a surgeon only has two arms. And the robot can have as many arms as is necessary, and the surgeon is limited by the joint in his hand, and you can add joints to these things.
Amazing. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about robots and the future of robotics with co-founder and CEO of robotics company iRobot, Colin Engel. And I've heard you talk about, I wanted to ask you about this idea of a merger. I mean, people always ask you, will robots rule the world? Will they supplant human beings? And the response I've heard you give is no, they will merge.
Well, I think that the idea that one day we'll answer our door and there'll be a humanoid robot ready to take over is, you know, it's something that Hollywood has presented to us as a wonderful and disturbing possibility. But the reality is going to be much stranger than that. Hmm. It's not going to be a simple A to B swap in control of the world. It's because technology is incremental, and we're already seeing situations where we have created robotic things that are helping people with disability. As many people start to lose their hearing, there are hearing aids. Beyond that, there's actual cochlear implants available today where you can surgically replace parts of the ear with an implant which will restore hearing to a very significant degree. And we're working on things for blind people, artificial eyeballs. I think we're at the state of the art right now is you can give a blind person the ability to differentiate between light and dark. And Dean Kamen has a fantastic...
The Segway inventor
is an initiative where he's designed and built a robot arm. And what makes this arm particularly unique is it's controlled using thought so that they have what's called a neural interface so that as you think move arm, like you might have thought move your arm when you had one, there's little electronics that have been interfaced with actual nerves that can pick up those signals and move the arm. And so here you have hearing, sight, and manipulation.
Three elements that you would build into any robot, instead built into
a person.
Humans.
And, you know, today, obviously, they're only used if someone has lost a capability through some type of tragedy or just getting old. But imagine the day when those things are actually higher performing than your organic counterpart. So that
arm, you know, or hearing or vision.
Right. You know, you want an MP3 player built into your ear. You want some kind of cool high-resolution display so you can pull up in your surf websites without having to sit in front of a monitor or wear glasses. Or,
2018, are those under the Christmas tree?
The any type of medical device that has long, there's so much that has to go into making sure that it's safe, but we are on a path to perhaps our children saying, "Hey, Dad, you know, I want to replace my ear." You know,
I want ears like the Brian's ear.
Right. I mean,
super hearing.
The concept of elective surgery to upgrade your human self is, I think, a very, very bizarre and interesting potential.
But humans are already proving themselves quite open to it in many ways, right?
Well, I mean, people are willing...
Look at all the augmenting surgeries that go on already.
Right, plastic surgeries, and then even with athletes taking performance-enhancing drugs, which are known to be bad for them, in order to gain an advantage. I mean, these types of human behaviors are the things that I believe are demonstrating an ultimate willingness to do some of this stuff.
To merge a bit with robotics. So I know you've thought a lot about this. Where do you see, you say stranger than a robot takeover. Like, where does this go?
Well, I mean, you could imagine sitting down in some classroom of the future where the teacher says, okay, now everyone unplug their neural implants before taking the test.
Meaning lots of people would have neural implants, which would be like
auxiliary brain power. I mean, or perhaps you could learn calculus simply by downloading calculus. I think that in the movie The Matrix, they had this idea that if you wanted to learn something, you could just have it downloaded into your brain. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but I think it would be possible to create a data bank that would interface to your brain that could give you this type of understanding. And you know, we're talking about ideas that are a ways out, but these are ideas based on real developments and real demonstrated and fielded medical therapies and replacements that are in use today. And so it seems to me far more inevitable and on a far more realistic time frame then when are we going to create human-level intelligence in a robot?
This merger idea I really found fascinating when I first heard you speaking about it. I mean, you know, we're looking at an environmentally challenging planet. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you maybe this just sounds loony to you, but do you imagine a time when the human brain kind of gets put into robotic capacity, physical capacity? Ray Kurzweil has been on our show a time or two. He talks about the singularity, when people don't die. I mean, they're sustained, you know, the mind goes on, maybe in an entirely different structure of physical expression. I mean, do our brains get plopped into a robot 100 years down the road and we just go on?
You know, I think that there's a great desire to try to figure out how we can achieve immortality.
Or just survive.
But the and I'm not sure. I don't see a singularity. I think that I suppose there's no engineering reason why a brain couldn't somehow be kept alive outside of a human body. And perhaps sometime in the future we'll be able to reproduce all of the different stimuli and physical needs that a brain might need. I think that that's that's the question of inspired engineering the future and finding someone who'd want to do that. But the idea of taking a human brain and finding interesting ways of interfacing that person's brain to the robot, I think, is something that can happen today. I spoke a little bit about this idea of telepresence.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big challenges that we face as a society is that we're getting older as a society. In all of the developed nations around the world, people are getting on as a whole, as a population, much older. And so how are we going to care for these people? Well, one way is instead of bringing all these people to into a hospital or into a assisted living facility, which are increasingly uneconomic and difficult to afford and staff, find ways of letting people live at home longer.
With robots to help them do that?
With robots to help them to do this.
To do things like what?
Well, start with vacuuming the floor.
Okay, so the house is cleaner.
But then you say, okay, well, what do I do about doctor visits? Okay, that seems like something you'd want to, instead of going to a hospital, or you want a nurse or a doctor to check in.
Robot pops out of the closet and takes my blood pressure?
Well, it doesn't even have to be an intelligent robot. Imagine a robot that is connected over the internet to a doctor sitting behind a computer.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of in a hospital, the doctor logs in to your robot and drives over and says, okay, Mr. Engel, let's open your mouth and say,
Wait, drives over or sits telepresent from the hospital while I'm while
he
you're
drives
at home?
The robot over.
Oh.
So he give him permission to log in. You give him permission to log into your robot.
Knock, knock, robot here.
Right, and so now the robot is the doctor, and because the remote doctor is operating the robot in your house, your robot
say to the machine.
Right, your robot now has the brain of a highly skilled human doctor, and you didn't have to get in your car to see the doctor, and the doctor didn't have to get in his car to drive to your house.
Not a predator drone, but a health drone, a healthcare drone.
A healthcare drone. And so he's able to diagnose and provide care for you. And when he's done, he just logs off and then logs on to his next patient's.
Is that cheaper
robot
than a doctor?
Absolutely.
To have that capable a robot at the door?
I mean, the transportation time and the logistics around getting patient and doctor together are why hospitals exist in the first place. That and the complexity and expense of medical equipment, but then the cost of that medical equipment is going down rapidly with miniaturization and silicon, and that could all be put on the robot.
Wow. Let's go to Janine in Essex, Massachusetts. Janine, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Just had a comment, and I'll take your comments off the air.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting show. I actually had some surgery done this past year, and it was done partially with a robot down at Mass General in Boston. And thank goodness the doctors were still there and was actually in the room, because it was a situation where they couldn't find one of my kidneys. And if the robot was left to doing the entire surgical procedure, he would have taken out the wrong part.
You mean the robot couldn't find the kidney or didn't get a proper fix on it?
The robot couldn't find the kidney, and so the robot couldn't found my kidney but thought it was a different part because my kidney was in the wrong place.
Oh, geez. So you were glad to have the human being standing there over the robot.
Absolutely. The idea of having a doctor diagnose that from 100 miles away is pretty scary for me. So thank you for your time. I'll take my
thanks, Janine. We're glad that got worked out. Colin, what do you say?
Well, I think that in that situation, it sounds like there was a robot being used as part of the surgery, But the robots, I'm not sure that a robot doesn't autonomously find the kidney, so that, my response would be, of course there was a robot there because, I'm sorry, a doctor there because the doctor is operating the robot. And what might have happened was that the tools that the robot doctor was controlling using the robot couldn't find the kidney. So maybe he had to stop using the robot and walk over to the patient and use a more traditional technique to go and complete the surgery. But
in a way, you're agreeing with Janine. You're saying, yes, thank goodness the doctor was there along. Because
I wasn't there, so I don't know. But I do know that the success rate with robot surgery is much, much higher than unassisted surgery. And the robot's able to make smaller incisions so that you're not cutting yourself open as substantially, and the recovery times are much, much faster, and the outcomes are much better using the robot. And, sometimes things aren't as in her situation, the organ wasn't where it was supposed to, and so they probably had to abandon this minimally invasive surgery and make a larger incision and go and look for where this organ was. And she's an outlier, and the safety procedures around using robots mean that there was a doctor there who could revert during these opening decades of robot-assisted surgery.
So a role for the robot there, and very importantly, a role for the doctor. Let's get a call from Albany, New York, and Ethan. Hi, Ethan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great show. I just wanted to touch base on your first caller's call about robots taking away jobs. I used to work in a molecular biology lab, actually at Brigham and Women's Hospital there in Boston. And now my new job is to travel around and actually repair robots that do the type of work that I used to do. So,
how do you feel about that, Ethan? How do you feel about that?
I actually feel really good about it because I found the work to be fairly monotonous. And, the robot can also have a level of consistency that humans, no matter how well trained, can struggle to achieve. And also you can really improve the throughput of the number of samples you can run, that type of thing, so much more when you sort of roboticize that process. And in that process, there's people like me who, the robots, like you said, they may be taking care of us in some ways, but they're also going to need people to take care of them. Boards break, motors burn out,
right.
All that kind of stuff.
Ethan, that's great testimony. The robot took your job. Now you repair the robot. You're happy with it. Let me get one more here. Thank you very much, Ethan, in Albany, in Fort Myers, Florida. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom and Colin. Regarding that earlier caller's concern, we all have fears that technology will replace us, specifically when it gets close to our home. We have to try to remember that robots are machines. Biologically, all mammals have about the same lifespan. That's 1 billion beats of the heart. For humans, that hits at about 25 years. The reason we live longer is because of machines, technology, starting with the first machine, the wheel, all the way through modern medicine. I don't think that first caller really understands, he's driving a machine every day. And anytime we can get a machine to do what we do, it will improve our efficiency. And we can live a better quality life, a longer life, and possibly, like you're talking about, all types of advances that can even improve, maybe, give us new sight, new hearing, new arms, new limbs, that type of thing. I think that the real question comes in the back of a lot of people's minds, and mine as I'm listening to the program driving, is all along is, is it possible that artificial intelligence in any time in the near future could become to that point where it is self-aware, where it is self-preserving, where it takes self-preservation to the next level, or possibly to the Terminator movie scenario where it simply takes over?
Mark, let me get the answer right here. We've just got a minute left. Colin, it's your background, AI. What do you say?
Well, I think that the concept of self-aware is far, far in the future, and we're going to have to somehow allow it to happen in that distant future. And I think that right now, we have robot vacuums that are starting to help out. We have robots that are controlled by our soldiers, helping them to go into dangerous situations without putting themselves at risk. But this this Hollywood vision of, you know, this the sentient robot, by the time that happens, we'll have this future of having people with robotic parts and the sort of the merging of technology
Does that mean you're saying we'll be up to the challenge?
Well, I think by the time it happens, the world's will already have had to address and deal with all sorts of very, very other interesting challenges about what is human and what is machine.
Robots may not seem like the other at that point.
Well, we'll find out. And I think that doing things like looking at the ethics of what a robot intelligence might have to abide by, like was discussed earlier, is, you know, that becomes relevant. So I believe that we can be responsible about this, and we do have time.
It is a fascinating present and horizon. Colin Angle, co-founder, CEO, and chairman of the robotics company iRobot, it's been great talking with you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
We'll go out with The Flaming Lips and their Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots Part 1. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for joining us.